Welcome to the Reputation Made Easy podcast. Today is episode 25 about GDPR isn't just a DPO problem. It was a great session, Ken, don't you think?
It was indeed, yeah. I absolutely love the topical sessions, and I would say this every week. I love all the sessions.
Equally,
but the topical sessions are lovely. But talking about the role of a DPO and how it intertwines to other departments is, you know, not a passion of mine, but it is something I feel a certain kind of way about, just because, you know, we only really get a certain kind of look in. You know, we kind of look through the looking glass a little bit into these businesses, and the only real interaction we get is, you know, if we're on site, if we're auditing, if we're doing ropers and stuff like that. And we can really see how the other departments function in detail, especially within my role. And it's always something I've felt can be quite a big struggle for DPOs, especially when I'm talking, I'm connecting with them, and I can see it's something that they do struggle with. Mm-hmm. So it was nice to have a little bit of chat about some of the departments where data protection really, really, really matters, and where you're dealing with some, you know, some more sensitive stuff, and how DPOs can try and combat that. And I think we went a little bit full circle, which was nice, and we finished it off with some, you know, maybe some practical guidance that the DPOs can take away and maybe try action in their own business. So I thought it was a really great session.
Yeah, nothing to add to that. I hope you enjoyed the episode and see you next week. Thank you.
Bye.
Happy Friday, everyone.
Let's jump right into the session, shall we? Obviously, topical session today, which is always very nice, and we're talking about GDPR not just being a problem for the DPOs, which is, you know, probably news to a lot of people. A lot of people sit in the chat room and think, oh well, everyone else seems to like to make it my problem and only my problem. But that's what we're going to be talking about today, talking about some of the other business functions where data protection really matters. Of course it matters to everybody, but before that, we've got quite a few interesting bits and pieces in the news, haven't we, Kate?
Yeah. And quite of them, like, separate news, but in the way very related one to another.
There's a couple of links there, isn't there?
Absolutely. I think it's definitely worth to start with the NHS ones. I think that the majority of our audience and ourselves as well in the business will relate to that. So starting with the first one around a data breach. So NHS Forth Valley is investigating a data breach after a non-clinical employee emailed a spreadsheet containing sensitive maternity information to their personal email account. So on this result, around 150 women were affected, with information including names, addresses, dates of birth, NHS numbers, and details of maternity care. After that, the employee said that the data was taken for work-related analysis and has since been deleted, but the NHS cannot verify that no further copies exist. The incident has been reported to both the ICO and the Police Scotland.
It's interesting for a multitude of reasons, isn't it, Kate?
Yeah.
The link we'll get onto, but a non-clinical member of staff, which I thought was an interesting distinction, because this sort of leads me to ask myself how they managed to get access to that data in the first place, then, if it is meant to only be for clinicians. You know, maybe there's an issue in relation to role-based access there that has gone a little bit unsaid. And personal email accounts, obviously that's something that we see often.
Absolutely.
In respect to personal data breaches that are occurring, is people moving, you know, it could have been, you know, really harmless. It might have just been a mistake, or they thought they could do some, you know, work after work kind of thing at home. But it is still quite a serious thing. I don't think people really realize the significance of doing something like that a lot of the time. You know, this sort of shifting of things away from sort of company documents and security almost. It's it is something that I think is probably really quite hard to spot, unless it's some kind of smoking gun, and potentially something that we don't see a lot of, but is happening more than we think, maybe.
Absolutely. Just because there are no visibility. Well, if this happens, right? So imagine, like, I don't know, coming to a situation where I'm assuming that the laptops that they have in NHS or in these hospitals, the clinics, they are, well, they need to stay there. You're just transferring these documents because probably you just want to be efficient and you just want to actually do some work.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
But if it's the last man standing, like, no one will actually know that he did this because there is no visibility unless anything goes wrong. I think I think it's a reality that the organization should be aware of and should prevent this of occurring. Like, it should be something on their policies, on the governance side of things already. Okay, this is absolutely not acceptable. And if it is, this is what you need to do. Mm-hmm. Letting us know, like, very informal. At least people, these matters are escalated and there is visibility on the management point of view.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure there are some controls that the emails can have that I think the, probably the, yeah. the issue is, you know, when you restrict what things go out to, it can sort of potentially halt stuff operationally. I mean, it all comes down to having a good procedure, but the procedure is only as good as it is followed.
It's followed.
You know, at least, you have something to back yourself up on, evidentially speaking, but it's more from the perspective that maybe it's an easy thing to do. Again, it was yeah. it was probably a really harmless thing. They said it was the individual had gone out and said that it was only put into their personal account for analytical purposes only. So potentially it was just for a role. Maybe it was for, or maybe even to be a bit cynical, it was for something that wasn't for a role. And the risk is obviously potentially higher. And obviously when we're looking at things like maternity, this is potentially a more vulnerable individual this point in time. And I'm sure they may feel a certain kind of way about that. And clearly they have, because they've gone out and communicated that to 150 women. And they obviously have expressed their concerns, which I think is, you know, valid and right. Yeah.
But I feel that the other piece of news is, I don't know, the ICO now was, it was escalated to the ICO. Mm-hmm. And now the NCO, not the ICO, the NHS England has issued a new national guidance reminding staff that accessing patient records without a legitimate work reason is unlawful. Mm. The guidance follows concerns about inappropriate access to the patient information and warns that curiosity is not a valid reason to view records.
It is interestingly timely.
It was a really good timing because definitely it happened in a couple of like 2 or 3 days in difference. So definitely interesting on that.
It's interesting how these things pop up. But I mean, maybe I think it's something that sectors probably see more so than others. I think there are probably sectors where you see more people who are more likely to look into stuff for curiosity.
Mm-hmm.
The NHS is probably a big thing for that. I mean, and there was the incident not long ago, I think, I don't know if me and you spoke about it, or you spoke about it with Himanshi maybe, about the individual's view and the thing about the in relation to a crocodile or something.
Yes, we spoke, me and you.
I've just got terrible memory then.
Thank you.
Yeah, but no, it's bad of me that. But it's the same kind of thing where, you know, people are naturally quite curious, and I know you're actually probably going to be a little bit more curious, but that real culture thing of making people feel that they're in a position to go and do that maybe is the issue.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it is hard to stop these things from happening. The job of a DPO is not to, like, you're not, it's not always prevention, it's sometimes just mitigation before it happens. You
absolutely
can't, same with everything, same with security and stuff like that. Not everything is 100% secure. You can't, you know, stop everything that happens. It's about how quickly we can respond, how much of a environment we've been able to cultivate where that happens less.
Mm-hmm.
Or for people that do it, there are ramifications and they're aware of what those are. But it is naturally something that happens for people just being curious, isn't it? People want to know stuff, you know, whether it's about other people, about, you know, their colleagues and stuff like that.
Yeah, and things, to be honest, is sometimes it's not even intentionally it's not with malicious intentions, I mean.
No, probably
it's
not.
Like people just like around and they have access to the information or can see it. So like, oh, let's like have like a sneak peek. They have no idea. And that's, I think, no idea about potential consequences or actually the detriment of that.
Mm.
So I think that's why this national guidance, and actually is the fact that is that NHS England produced this type of guidance, is really important, because sometimes you see this guidance coming from coming from a position of or the ICO or coming from the news that this happened and therefore this was the reactions to it and the actions taken. But now the fact that there is a guidance from the authority body is really relevant, I think, because it's very sector specific, and I'm sure that individuals would appreciate that very much.
Yeah, no, for definite. for definite. Is there any other bits and pieces of the news that you want to chat about, Kate, or do we want to jump into the topic at hand?
I mean, Ajit, there is just one that I would just like to mention just because, yeah, about Meta. So again, Meta smart glasses are back. And now they are developing a prototype of AI smart glasses. So it's exactly the same, but now that they are able to continuously recording audio and taking photos throughout the day. So the main idea is that the users could later ask AI questions about what they have seen or heard, effectively creating a searchable memory of their daily lives. Meta is also exploring whether the information collected could be used to train, again, obviously, its AI models while considering technical measures such as deleting raw footage and retaining only extracted metadata.
So is that only, well, I guess the question I have is that only for as long as the glasses is on and I'm recording, or will it just naturally record always? You know, if I've left them to the side,
like on your piano table,
is it still recording? You know, and it leads to a real, I mean, it's really concerning. It's problematic regardless, but I think that also opens up a potential of a can of worms for maybe people who weren't aware that it's going to continue to record. I mean, we already seen previously about the fact that they were using footage to train individuals, and and the training quality had led to seeing quite explicit footage,
yeah.
I think.
How
they keep being able to push forward with this with such vigor is weird. I've seen that there are obviously quite a few like people publicly sort of objecting to this kind of use, but sometimes it just feels like the masses are happy to ignore the privacy concerns for the sake of something being AI. People treat AI as such a trivial thing now. It's like, oh, it's got AI, so no matter what the risks are for it, I'm probably cool with it because AI is new and interesting, and you know, seamlessly it will make my life easier, no matter what, to what extent it is actually doing that.
Yeah.
I think it can be a great tool in certain circumstances. Why I would want to be able to have AI built into my glasses that are recording people, I don't know why. I don't know what my rationale would be.
Honestly, I think I don't know. I read this and I thought about influencers. That's what the first thing that came to my mind was about the influencers that they want. Like, I don't know, if you go traveling and you want to record all your day and to actually create content, whatever that means, for content for the social media accounts.
Influencer
kind of thing. But honestly, I think before these glasses came up, we already see some challenges with Alexa or any sort of device similar to that.
God, that feels like ages ago. That was a concern.
Yeah, that was a concern because actually it's the same with Siri. As soon as you said a trigger word or actually words that can be sound like it, but actually is not the exact word to trigger them, they automatically are listening what you're saying. Like, and there was actually news, I remember mentioning this, well, ages ago, but there were problems around this because there were very close words that is not Siri, but is like very similar to Siri. And close your enough. Phone automatically starts recording and answering to you. But I feel like people just believe in AI and rely so much in AI because we don't see anything actually happening, like materially speaking. Is everything is just abstract? Is data? Is information? Is nothing touchable? You can't actually see. You can only see when anything goes wrong, and then you can see the consequences of what actually happened.
Well, we've seen how people kind of evaluate their data and the value of it. I mean, I don't know if you remember the whole stuff with, I think it was Temu or something that was offering like money for data kind of thing. And everybody and their dog that I knew was jumping on that. They were absolutely buzzing about that. But it's because I think to most people, I think they probably evaluate their data as something that's quite low in consideration for money that they probably want or need. Which to an extent is maybe fair. Maybe some people have got to the point where they feel that no matter what, they're kind of stuck and data will be shared and sold and people will market to them unsolicited. Maybe people have got to this point of acceptance almost, which is
awful, but
that's kind of how it feels like it is to me, I guess, this sort of acceptance that this data is just out there and I might as well and reap some kind of benefit from it.
Yeah.
But on that very dreary note, let's talk a little bit at the topic at hand. So we're talking about GDPR that isn't just a DPO's problem. Now, of course, we know that the tasks and the reason for the DPO existing is to monitor data protection compliance and, you know, to meet some of the requirements of the UK GDPR. But in reality, when you look at the actual requirements of a DPO, I can't think of any DPO who does just the things on those lists.
Absolutely not. I feel that the DPO is like kind of the masters of like any sort of business, isn't it?
I really emphasize with a lot of in-house DPOs because, you know, we see firsthand with how much stuff sort of outwardly that they then have to start to think about. You know, it gets broader into security, into cyber sometimes, into risk. Now AI, you know, I'm sure there's going to be a couple people in here who are getting all these questions now about, hey, can we do this with AI? Can we do that with AI? Or maybe not. And people are just, you know, outwardly sort of going ahead with the use of it. I'm working with a customer at the moment who's company and directors have just gone all out with AI, and he's like, he feels like he's fighting a losing battle against it.
It can exactly be the opposite, can you not?
Well, yeah, exactly.
When you just crack on with it.
I mean, at least they're asking sometimes, I guess. But I think what I've always seen and felt is that sometimes a lot of other parts of business are happy to accept that the DPO is, you know, this must be okay to do this because the DPO is monitoring and is looking after it. So all I really need to do is listen to the DPO and everything will be all well and good. But of course, data protection matters to all departments. All departments are going to be handling personal data in some kind of way. What me and Kate wanted to do really is we want to spend a little bit of time talking about some of the departments where we think data protection or data protection adjacent law is really quite important, more important than others in some cases. It's hard to say, but somewhere maybe they don't realize to what extent they process maybe some higher risk data, or they undertake activities that are a little bit higher risk. I mean, there's a couple that sort of flood to me immediately in terms of like departments. I mean, the first one is always like sales and marketing for me. Obviously, I tend to lump them in within the same brush. And I mean, I think my reasons for that really is it comes from two things. Is one, I think to an extent, what you can see publicly is that a lot of salespeople and potentially even some marketing folk don't always consider the rules of things like VPECA and the GDPR in respect to the outreach to maybe not always other businesses, but especially in respect to B2C a lot of the time, I feel. I don't know what you think. Maybe you think I'm absolutely wrong, Kate, but that's just how I feel with that occasionally. I'm sure it's not all sales and marketing people, but just from what I've seen.
I mean, I think obviously there are cases and cases. Unfortunately, I feel that from doing, I don't know, involving experience with actually dealing with all devices teams from the client. Majority, I could identify these gaps when I'm doing ROPA exercises is where I can find actually where all these gaps are. And I feel that you're absolutely spot on. I think sales and potentially like more marketing as well, they are normally the first contacts that actually there is between the organization and the client.
It's an introduction to a business, isn't
it? Exactly. Where you collect, well, the details through websites, to emails, to this, to that. So if we're not, we don't have like the all the phases on the backer side, the consent, all the consent management, how do you collect the details, where they should go, et cetera, subscription or not. Everything from there will escalate until, well, until the DPO that should be the last resource to you. But you're absolutely wrong. I think we manage on a sales marketing perspective, normally the first contact is where you ask the prospects on the sales side. You deal with their preferences and what they actually want to do. And I think everything should be respected in that regard. Yes.
So I have a question for you, right? I'm interested to see your thoughts. How do you feel about like LinkedIn outreach directly? As in like personally reaching out, because you know, I naturally get a lot of messages on LinkedIn, you know, which I don't really have much of a gripe about, you know. Get your bag if that's what you're after. You know, appreciate making money is the bottom line for sales. And you know, I kind of accept that sometimes to an extent you've got to understand that that's going to happen, but it doesn't necessarily always mean that aligns very well with the PECA and data protection law. Now, the question I have for you is, Do you think there's a potential argument that these people are making that LinkedIn private messaging is B2B?
Yes, I definitely think so. And it's quite interesting you are making that point, because I was delivering training to one of our clients and you were focusing on what is marketing, direct marketing, and the difference between service messages. And we came then to what Kai said was the LinkedIn messages. And we were actually looking through my own account and to see the amount of messages that I was receiving. And and the question that I get, okay, but why they are sending these sort of messages? And would you consider is actually direct marketing, and in what extent? And I then verified every single content of the message, and I realized that they are sent definitely because of my capacity as a professional in data protection people, as a consultant, etc. And the content of the message itself is really, really thought through. So there is, at least mine, they introduce themselves and then they kind of make the link between their business and DPP. And they just say, well, I would love to have a chat. Let us know if you want to.
Yeah.
And I think this is something, one thing. I think that there will be, and this is, don't get me wrong, I think he's a borderline. I think he's a massive borderline, because I do appreciate the interest and the business legitimate interest on their side to actually come to me and understanding, okay, would be able to do like a partnership, or would you be interested in our products to make your life much easier? And I know that is my capacity as a professional that this is actually being handled. However, there is a massive borderline, and I think the main difference would be what is the actual content of the message that they are sending. Because I think there were like other couple of the messages I've received, they were clear targeting me, they were clear messaging me directly and selling me their product, like directly.
Well, do you think the sort of counter argument to that for me is right? If it wasn't LinkedIn and it was Instagram.
Yeah.
And then we'd probably look at it very differently, wouldn't we?
Yeah. Yeah.
Now,
I agree with that.
Is there a distinction that has to be made because LinkedIn is a business platform, or it's a social media platform for businesses potentially?
Yeah, principle.
At the end of the day, I am signing up or I'm agreeing to join LinkedIn, not through my DPP email anyway. And people might do it with their company email, but I'm on LinkedIn personally as Kate and Glancy, as an individual. Yes, I work for a business, and that is obviously part of what I'm shouting out about all the time on LinkedIn. But am I, again, they're not reaching out to me in a personal capacity, but have I set myself up on LinkedIn in a personal capacity? It's a really weird one, isn't it? And it's awkward. And I think there's probably a justification both ways. There's probably a real key in what you're saying there about the tone and the direction of the message.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's obviously things that organization have been deployed, because I mean, as soon as I change my title to manager, I hear from people all the time.
Yes. Is,
you know, sometimes very welcome, and if people do want to approach me on LinkedIn for sales messages, then, you know, I feel like there's enough of a justification there potentially for some B2B stuff. But I have seen previously in the past that people have got a little annoyed by a little, and I can also understand that line of thinking. So I think it's a very fine line that you walk as a sales professional, as a BDM or a BDE in reaching out and making those comms. But yeah, I guess if anywhere's the place for it social media wise, it's probably LinkedIn.
Of its nature, you're absolutely right.
You got to look at the intent of something existing and the intent of the reason behind people being on something like LinkedIn. And I feel like then you can make a probably a fairly solid argument from that basis. But it's open to objection and complaints and contention, like all things.
Absolutely. I think as well, like in the end of the day, you know, you're talking about that, and I'm thinking if I was, for example, on Miles, my feet now, is a really unfair, isn't it? Because in the one day, well, not unfair, it's just something that needs to be considered. We have the legislation, we need to understand, okay, case by case, what we need to do, what should be the term, what should be the direction, what sort of message should be sent to that direct person. But at the same time, we have the leadership probably on management side pressing.
We've got to reach out to these people.
You need to do this, you need to do that, etc. So I think two things I would say just to probably complete on this idea is, One, I definitely think that the department should be more aligned. I think there is a complete misalignment in general. And I feel that, again, with ROPAs is where I definitely identify these gaps more, is there is a disalignment between all the departments in terms of what is the business interest and what are the business ideas, but as well, what actually we can achieve and what we need to protect and what we need to do in terms of framework that we need to follow, any pack, etc. So this goes along with my second idea, that is, I am definitely not against of the usage of these social media platforms, particularly LinkedIn, because by nature it's professional capacity. But I really would highly recommend to look into the sort of messages you are sending and why you are sending them and understanding why, because I do appreciate the organization itself is not a person, is it? It's like, is represented by different numbers of people. And as you were mentioning, the fact that you just mentioned manager, automatically the sort of messages that you received were completely different, probably more towards some products, towards more partnerships, etc. And I appreciate that. I think we need to review all the content of the message, but at the end of the day, to not use service message as an argument to actually target it and market your messages. Don't do it.
What's the technique? They call it sludging, is that right?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. There is a
sludging and nudging. I thought it was a cookies thing, I might be wrong. But no, I also see your point, Cara. Very different to things like nuisance calls. They're definitely a lot more LinkedIn is a little bit more of a place for it, and you can actually control what's coming in and coming out. Nuisance calls are completely different, and I think that's something that the broader public deal with much more. And I'm sure you all receive nuisance calls at time to time, and as you can see from the link that you've shared, Karis, thank you for that. That it is something that people are actively being fined for. When we look at the PECA fines that have actually been made, a lot of them are for unsolicited calls specifically. Some of them emails as well. But people that just keep getting these big long call lists or big long email lists, and they're just sort of mass spam messages out, and it looks like the ICR are actually pushing forward with some kind of reprimands and stuff, which is quite nice. I mean, I know we stopped talking about the news, but I don't know if anybody else has seen about John Edwards seeming like he's not really going down very quietly.
Yeah.
In respect to his departure of the Information Commissioner, apparently potentially trying to raise some kind of case from the individual who reported him initially, which, I don't know if that's a good move, really. But it is something to be aware of. Mm-hmm. Obviously, he seems like he is going to be kicking a bit of a fuss. I'm hoping it's not going to have any kind of detriment on any kind of operations or anything, but it is still ongoing. I thought we kind of put a pin in it and we could move on, but it's probably going to be something that remains to be prevalent. We'll keep you all updated as and when it does.
I think he's just trying to protect his reputation, but I'm not sure if there is much to do on that regard.
No, and there's quite a few people on LinkedIn that are...
I have a few words about it.
But quick thing that I saw, and I thought I probably should say it, but I know there are a couple of departments, Kate, that you wanted to mention as well.
So I absolutely spot on sales marketing. That'll be my number one priority because of all those reasons. But then HR would be one of them that would like to highlight, because even if there are no specific department HR, we all deal with HR records in a way. And the second one that I think is completely overlooked, particularly in my clientele being more housing associations kind of thing, are more directed to customer services. So bringing just the HR on board, I would say that obviously probably depending on the nature of the organization you are talking about, but in principle will be always a department that handles the most sensitive data within across the organization. And I feel they manage, all these sickness records, recruitments, disciplinary matters, any sorts of equality information, monitoring, etc. So every single one of these activities obviously have personal data, potentially even special cards related majority of them. And I know that there is, because of the HR and the employment law in itself, they have these confidentiality duties and all these clauses in their own contract as a normal employment contract. But obviously, the GDPR adds way more layers to that. Adds the if the information that they are processing is actually enough, or actually is it not too much? Mm. Do you actually need it? And then the main one for me is who needs to access and for how long you should be retained.
Mm.
And I think in HR, alongside with the data protection leader, if it's not the same person, because sometimes we see that actually the HR manager or the main responsible for the HR department normally is as well, or the privacy leader, or the data protection matters, the person within the organization. And I feel, unfortunately, that they have a lot in their shoulders and they do and deal with so much data. And I feel that from experience, they have no training whatsoever in the data protection field.
Mm.
There are loads, and the majority of the problems that I've seen are actually along the retention periods and the retention schedules that actually make that work. And I would like now to probably with accessible and then making this accessible, I'll probably do the link with another department that may be or maybe not related to HR in a way, that is our IT. Because IT, so we have HR that obviously collects the data alongside with marketing, collects the data, manage it, handle it, process it, etc. But then we have IT that we need to rely on to actually put this all, implement these access controls, encryption, security measures in place. One does not work without the other on a security basis, because the IT needs to follow instructions, need to follow like a script. Okay, what do I need to do? In what extent? But then the HR does not have the capability to actually carry out this.
Mm.
So I definitely think that these two should be hand to end. They should be literally alongside with one another. And I'm not sure about you, Ken, but I feel when, again, not being repetitive, but within the ROPA exercises, I feel that there is this disalignment between both. Sometimes I ask, okay, so what are the security measures probably implemented in here?
Mm.
Or for example, okay, you announce this retention period that is applicable. Well done. How do you confirm that actually there is deleted? What actually is the next step?
Yeah.
I don't know. Needs to be IT. Okay, we'll go to IT and then let's double check then.
Yeah.
We actually did not have that information on our side. I'm not sure. What is the trigger? It's like, okay.
Yeah.
Do you understand you're the problem? That
there can be a bit of a breakdown, can't they? And you're right. I mean, I think the ROPA is probably the main bit where you find that, especially if the IT happens to be outsourced as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it can be quite complicated. And you do find that a lot of people, when I've been doing the ROPA, have just been like, oh, okay, you know, I'm talking about retention, I'm talking about security measures, sometimes even international transfers and sharing data. Oh, you'll have to speak to IT, I speak to IT, and poor IT turns to me and they go, well, I had no idea about this service. You know, retention, we've been trying to implement retention for a while and it's not really working. You know, it's really rare I look at a ROPA and even one, they just listen to whatever I'm trying to tell them. I'm like, no, this is not what we're trying to do here. Yeah. You don't just nod your head at what I'm trying to say. I'm trying to help. I'm trying to guide. But I need to know what's reflective to the business right now. I can't just make you a really nice, flashy ROPA because that is not helpful to anybody.
Exactly.
I need to know what is actually going on. And they tend to look at me relatively sheepishly and go, you know, we probably don't really delete our records as well as we should. I go, well, okay, fine, that's fine. I've seen enough times now to not be alarmed. And, you know, it's something that we need to work on. And I feel like sometimes some of these services do feel a little bit worried when it comes to data protection, that they have to have all the answers.
Yeah.
And that when I, you know, if, you know, granted, it has been a little while since I've done Europa, but the last time I did sit down with people and say, listen, I need you to be honest with me, because if I just say this law for basic could apply, this law for basic could apply, this is probably who you're sharing it with, this is probably where it's going, it doesn't serve any good to the business.
And if you've been, pointless, isn't it?
It's pointless. Yeah. Because at the end, if you've been honest and reflective, when I build a risk register or an action plan at the end, it's fully reflective that way. And we can actually work on addressing these gaps. Sometimes it's about not being afraid to not know. And, you know, even as good as the DPO is and as good as you might be as an IT professional or as a HR advisor, HR lead, whatever, it's not always easy to understand all elements of the business and cooperate very well with each other. It can be quite hard. There's a lot of stuff going on. People, you know, especially with IT, they are constantly receiving requests from people. They constantly have broader things to do. you might not always have a direct relationship with them, again, especially if they're external, you know, especially if they're maybe, if you're all office based and they're not, and it's about maybe trying to bring that connection together, whatever way you can, you know, your steering groups, you know, meeting with heads of services when you can, if that's feasible, you know, trying to build connections with all people in the business. And maybe that's a lot harder said than done, because I mean, I know, you know, that I know everybody that works in DPP, we all get to know each other where we can, but if a business is thousands of people,
yeah,
that's not an easy task by any means, is it? And everybody's busy, and it may not always be the easiest thing to be like, oh, you know, I need to foster this relationship with this service or with this service or with this service, because you probably all have other things that are going on that are quite challenging.
Absolutely. But
especially for the sake of a lot of elements of data protection, HR, IT, DPO, feel like that, you know, you got to have a really tight-knit relationship, I feel. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely, yeah.
Because there's a lot of things that they do that interlink with what you do, you know, marketing as well. Yeah. And sales, you know, all business functions realistically should have a direct funnel to the DPO, but the DPO should also be able to expect that they have a direct funnel mm-hmm. back out to them. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I feel like maybe it's a little bit of a one-way street from what I've encountered. It's about, you know, opening the roads up a little bit. But again, no easy task. It would feel too easy for us to say that and then for it to be something that's done. But in an idealistic world, it would be nice.
I think so. And, you know, I was listening to you and I was thinking, okay, well done for us to identify all these problems, all these trends, and identify all of this. But how actually can we sort it? How would be then our recommendations? And before I go to the customer services, because I do think, and actually I would like to pick up, I'll go to customer service before I go to this kind of my potential, not solution, but suggestion. Mm. The customer services, and I'm dealing with this like for 2, 3, 4 weeks right now with one of my clients about data breaches, actually several then that happen with customer service department. And I did a report and I finalized yesterday. And we need to understand that majority of the data breaches that happen are actually made by mistakes provoked by human beings, not cyber attacks. Obviously, the ones that probably with more consequences will be from cyber attacks and now AI, et cetera, but actually big ones, and in terms of numbers, actually from people. And this comes from sending the emails to the wrong people, sending updates to the wrong customer, information that actually is within the customer services platforms or even HR platforms are wrong. It's just wrong, being inaccurate or actually wrong, belonging to another individual. And I think it's important because, just to highlight, because the customer service department are the ones that actually are the customer facing. They are the ones actually dealing directly with the client or the customer. And they are managing directly face-to-face with the data, whereas with the DPO only comes up when actually there is a problem with this front. So it's important just to establish very good process, really by design, automatically everything is right. The same goes for procurement on the supplier's perspective. And to finalize, I think that one of the big things that I think is a problem between all of this is the lack of communication. I think is related to the fact that everyone is really busy, which I appreciate. Probably is lack to the lack of resources as human resources. A lot of lack of guidance. People just don't know what to do in certain circumstances. And then they feel scared to actually ask the question and raise this to their line managers or escalate the question, because they will feel, I should probably knew this, so I will stay away from it because I don't want any problems. And it shouldn't be. I think the culture is the mindset, and the culture on the organization should change, should be, we are all a team. Obviously, we want as less errors as possible, as many less breaches as possible. But if they happen, we are here to work as a team and we will sort it, because we have not only the breach to actually mitigate with the mitigation actions, etc., but as well using that as an opportunity for learning. Okay, let's identify then, why did it happen? It was just a mistake, because we are all humans, that happen. Or actually, because you did not know. Did you not escalate the data breach because you did not know that you should escalate this to the data protection office or to your line manager, or you were just scared? Or even like lack of training, or just create this awareness. And I feel that one place to actually do that in a right way is having working groups, for example, having working groups with the big process owners, identifying the problems and actually talking about data protection in a daily basis, not just an annual training exercise that needs to happen every year, because we need a checklist to just, okay, done. We already spoke about data protection now for an hour, done next year then. I think should be a daily matter. If there is a problem, as we have, well, yeah, obviously we need to have it, but like organizations might have like, okay, I want to send this email marketing. Am I all right to do this? Can I just send this like that? Can you just review the email content? Can I just send to everyone and raise the question and open this? Because then the departments will be completely aware of what are you doing? What is actually your role and responsibility? And how can we help as a team?
Yeah. Fantastic points. I mean, I'm not even in a mind to add to it. I think it's good to let us sit here. A perfect little point. Because we are at the end of the session, funnily enough, isn't it? Because I didn't have anything to say.
I'm just feeling like that. If you were listening to me, or
no, I was listening. I actually was. I just didn't want to talk about it too much. I didn't want to feel like I was repeating sort of the calls and drives for people to communicate. Because I sometimes feel not like a hypocrite, but like I'm almost like I'm dictating people what to do with something that I'm not actually experiencing. So I don't want to sound silly, but I think those are all absolutely fantastic points. You know, we want people to get out in the business and make data protection a daily thing and entwine in your lives. And
as easy as possible.
Yeah. You know, if they want to find out even more about data protection, you can bring them over here.
Yeah. Yes,
and we can borrow them for 45 minutes if that's what they really want. But on that note, we're all wrapped up for today. We'll be back next week. We
just have 2 points before you leave. I'm sorry. So we are launching our e-learning platform next week. So stay tuned on that. I'm sure that you will receive some updates. We'll probably leave a link or something on the chat. But stay away. Keep your awareness on our website.
Keep away.
Keep well away. on the training side of our website. And at the same time, we would like to ask you, because definitely next week will be GDPR news, but then we'll continue with our topical sessions. So we are very intrigued to know which areas would you like to actually be talked about, because we are obviously planning the rest of the year. So we'll be very interested to know what you want us to talk about.
Absolutely.
And on that note, I'm sorry.
I'm all good. Yeah. If there's anything you guys want to add to the podcast for next week, or the week after, sorry, should I say, let me know. Okay, so I'll find myself a special guest, unless someone in the chat wants to nominate themselves as an even specialer guest. Then feel free to do that as well. Drop in your thoughts if you guys want to hear anything particular. I'll drop a message to me, Kate or Miles. And we'll catch you all next Friday. As always, have a good weekend, folks, and come on, England.
Thank you. Bye.